Blog Talk Radio. Agenda for this evening is going to be, as usual, what is the proof of the legacy of colonial terrorism? Our second agenda item, report for the death camps on political prisoners. And as usual, our stalwart Panther Buddy, excerpts from the Black Activist Writers Guild by Larry Pinkney. And our main topic of this evening is this week's news analysis, including a discussion of the migration, the massive migration out of Africa into Europe. So without further ado, I'm Betty Davis, and we're going to turn you over to our brother and general and warrior and philosopher, Ralph Pointer. But before doing that, I want to give a shout out to our usual guest panelists and our co-hosts. I'd like to give a shout out to Brother Larry Pinkney. I want to thank him for that incredible online information about the exposure of the corruption of the justice system by some lawyers. And I hope he'll get a chance to discuss that with you. And our stalwarty Sister Lynn is in the house, Sister Lynn Stewart. And I do believe Ann Lamb is in the house. And Brother Ralph, I believe Ann Lamb has a conference call, so we might need to put her first. And hopefully by that time, Joel Myers will be in the house. Okay, Brother Ralph, take it away. Let's hear that creed.
Good evening, brothers and sisters, my family. What I believe, January 2016. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered, except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. And the lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as other minds, or the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And now this evening, we have so much to discuss because the revolution that is taking place today is the information revolution. We are being overrun with information night and day. We hear and see history repeated over and over and over again. And one of our discussions tonight is about migration. History being repeated over and over again. And so let's go back for a few short years to talk about migration and what creates migration. Migration is created by the desire of people to access resources. Money moves freely, and as money moves freely, as much as governments try to curtail people moving, it can't be done because people will follow the money. Now, one of the major migrations we discuss is the migration of Europeans to America, to the Americas. For what? For wealth. And what is wealth supposed to do? Wealth is supposed to and does give one a better way of life under the capitalist system. Or maybe under any system, wealth gives one a better way of life. And so the Europeans, and let us always remember, the Europeans came here not as individuals, but as trading companies. The Dutch East India Company, the Virginia Trading Company, the Hudson Bay Trading. They were corporations in Europe coming to America to make money. Did they have respect for life of the people here? I tell you, they did not. And history tells you they did not. What did they do with the people here? And we could tell this story over and over and over again about what they did to the people who were here. And history repeats itself. And I would like to go into the details as to the history of the oppression of the indigenous people here, the destruction, the disappearance. But I won't do that at this moment because we know it. We also understand that the people they brought here after they went after the wealth of Africa, the people they brought here as wealth to create a greater wealth, and what happened to them. And we look, and we march forward 300 years, 200 years, and we see the great migration of today, the people from North Africa, the people from the Middle East, going to Europe. For what? And it reminds me of a conversation I heard many years ago. A young man from Honduras worked with me in a motorcycle shop, and one of the customers said to him, "What are you doing here?" Now, the customer was a very sophisticated gentleman who worked Wall Street and understood economics, and he was very angry about a price. And he says, "What are you people doing here? Price of a repair of a motorcycle." And he said to the worker from Honduras, "What are you doing here?" And the young man from Honduras that I didn't know that he had an understanding of economics, nothing sophisticated. But what he said is, "You came to my country and took everything from my country and brought it here. And all I'm trying to do is get a little wealth from my country that you brought here and buy my kid a bicycle. I can't do it in Honduras because you brought the wealth here." People follow wealth. People from North Africa, the Middle East, are going to Europe to get the wealth that was taken from their countries. People, and let us update, we don't have to go to Europe to find out about people taking wealth. What we have in America, and I'm talking about right here in Brooklyn, where we are broadcasting from, areas close to Manhattan become valuable. What happens? The migration is from the wealthy people to come to the poor neighborhoods. We all know it. Jack up the rents, throw the people out, and have access to the wealth that is there. It's an old story, and it applies to people over and over and over again. And we will be discussing what is happening throughout the program. And without much ado, I had promised last week to hear from indigenous people here, and I want people to be a little patient. And so we have indigenous people who would like to tell us of their problems that were created by the European migration to America. And to continue our discussion, and we had ended it last week about culture, and I say to everyone, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, there is one culture that is relevant to me, because the job of oppressors is to oppress, and the job of the oppressed is to fight for freedom. My freedom, I struggle for liberation. That's the only culture I know. I'm going to turn it back to Betty.
All right. Again, I want to welcome our co-host this evening, Sister Lynn, Brother Larry, Brother Tom Syracuse, and we're going to have a special presentation from our Lakota warriors. We would like to presentation. You need to mute the background noise. We cannot have background noise. We want to limit our presentation to 3 minutes. And then you give time to everybody to cover the rest of the topics that we have on our agenda. So at this point, without further ado, we're going to listen to our Lakota warriors. Brother Chinupa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much.
Well, first off, you know, I'm going to say it this way for all the listening audience to understand, you know, how far we have come and what we're still in the fight for. So bear with me, folks. This is for all of you. Okay, Mitaki, Piakele, Chanupa Gula, Money, Mecha, Wona, Ogna, La Cota, Huagla, Kigle, Hokata, Kewaganaki. One day took late Hoksha Hupina, Etaha Mila Haska, Kilena Lila, Nahasioati, or Kitra, Pitrehia, which Aqua. Cha, Takomani, Toha Oyate, Lena, Nights, York, in a Hetaha, Wolak Hotta, his walks up, and we see Suta always popped in a. Mila Haska, Lena Takpe, Chalk, the Hunter. Tony Lena Lechus, the Oyaki, or Kit Hoppy, Hena Eak to the Oyakips. Hena Honey Hetchus, the young Kepi. Hoyun Kawana, Mila Haska, Lena Yap, in a Oyaki, Hooks of Art, that wake us in a Woshia, Pik Lena, which Hakuna, a Waspek, in a coop in a Wetaha, Lakota, Kilena, which Akis on a Tehia Ignakapi. For one day, took Lay his son, Lila Osnina, ha. Yotiekia, Asta Comedy, Wolak Hotogna. Unkier, Lenato Han, Mila Haska Opu, Takpeon Yapina, Woyuk Chatle, Suta Unyako, Kehecha, Oyate, Lena Nahunyo, then Iwoglak of the Astoni Hitchens, Hitchumshi. Once I got a Mila Haska, Hawo, Hena Atia, Wastela Kapnaha, we choy it all, become Hena Humpi. No Kier, Lena Taktuk Humpi, Kilecha. Mila Haska, Lena Lakota, Kiwaketa, Laps in the Haki. Helcha Uncaso, Doctor Hitchani. Natiata, Wakapi, Mithaki, Yotikia. Hena Hitchens, the Mahoma, Kapcha Tokata, Kiwahuna, Oichaki. Lakota Ogna. Nakiksuya Pomita Kipi. Wona Hoki Lena Chichupi, Chante Ogna. Why am I Lakota? Now we choy Kilena, Tony, Hena, Yuha Uskatapsni. Wola kota ki hena wak hanki aikwaki, wakat hanka ki chimanetu, na unchima kati lena, nukin woki, kinon kupi. Teon chat hokata kia, taku lena ukishkong teki le.
Can we get a translation?
Tachinki lena igluhunia pina et taha, wak sa pekilena le, wok pekilena chichupi. Now you told me you gave me 3 minutes, and 3 minutes has not been up yet.
Okay.
So I'm almost done, and then I'll translate it for you real fast, okay? See, that's
thank
the
you.
Thing.
Okay, please continue.
Wolak Hotogna. Lena le we hasa pa o yate lena isha mila haska kawo kekina waskila kapi. Heo shakaksa e magna kap. Mie le we choye ki mitra duene hechus e kaksa e magna ka okis. Heo chalechus e wagla kina ni duwe be honey we choye wunzilo happy. Na you charge you wunzilo happy. Oh, wana na wa shiti glena tekhio ni chua mna kaksa eni gina ton tangne lo hafne as we choya ni tropi agloni na chake ni tropi agloni as pokie ulat khotam na hafti le wak sape wak sape hena na hafti wo kike na yu hafti ho eta ha wo kula tha ki chipi ake ape tozi le chise wa huma ki amna kaksa ma e magna ki ho eta ha mila hafti wo ni ape ki te chichu ho pila ma apelo ho kai.
Thank you. Hello, are you still there? Okay, Brother Tanupa, is the transmission cut? We don't hear you. All right. I don't see Brother Tanupa on the air, so we're going to wait for them to... we're going to continue, and when they're back on, we will ask for their translation. At this point, I want to acknowledge that Brother Joel is in the house, and I think we have a special guest, 7507. Could you give us a greeting, please? The last four digits are 7507.
Yes, hi, everybody. It's Rich. How is
okay,
everybody
Rich.
Doing?
Welcome. That was a Lakota warrior. We have been anticipating that Reverend Harris, who has organized the Black Lives Matter march, is also in the house. Reverend Harris, 4277. Greetings, Brother Harris.
Good evening.
Thank you
how
so
you?
Much for tuning in. We will definitely get back to you. Brother Larry, would you like to take the mic at this point?
Thank you very much, Sister Betty Davis. My love, my strength, my regards to you, Sister Betty Davis, to our beloved Sister Lynn Stewart, and, of course, to our warrior, ongoing warrior, Brother Ralph Pointer. All power to the people. The struggle goes on. It does not end. It continues. I'm going to say right up front that, you know, I can speak Swahili and all kinds of languages, but I would like to show respect to my audience by, if I say something such as La Fima Tushende Ingile Shaka, which is Swahili from East Africa, I immediately say what that means, okay, and what that means is we shall succeed without a doubt, okay. I'm looking forward to the translation from the indigenous native brother. I look forward to that. I'm sure our entire audience is. All power to the people. All right, now, I want to say that today being January the 5th in the year 2015, I've already said the struggle goes on. Our political prisoners all over this country, U.S. political prisoners, all right, United States political prisoners all over the country, black, white, brown, red, yellow, people who have dared to stand up, dared to be courageous, and who are paying an enormous price. And not only are they paying that price, but their family, all right, their wives, their husbands, their uncles, their aunties, their children, all of us, our communities, are paying an enormous price because we have allowed our political prisoners to continue to be in these gulags of the United States. And that's what they are. They are gulags, torture camps. Let us be clear about that. Whether we're talking about Mumia Abu-Jamal, whether we're talking about Leonard Peltier, whether we're talking about Brother Seth Hayes, we can go on and on. It's an endless list, as Gil Scott-Heron said, that won't be missed. And we need to get rid of that list by getting our political prisoners out. Whether we're talking about Reverend Edward Pinckney, all of our political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, all of them, U.S. political prisoners. So having said that, I believe in history. I believe, as Howard Zinn said, and I'm paraphrasing his words, that those who do not understand history are like leaves in the wind, all right? Because anytime anybody says anything, they just accept it because they have no reference point. But I believe in history, as Brother Malcolm X said, that, you know, history is a determination of the past, the present, and the future. Brother Malcolm was correct. And, you know, I just want to say, today being January the 5th, 2015, let me just move ahead one day to January the 6th, 1970. Again, one day ahead to January the 6th, 1970. What happened then? Well, what happened then was the LA 18, all political prisoners rally at the Hall of Justice and as well as in other places throughout California. That was January the 6th, 1970. And also tomorrow, which is January the 6th, okay? But January the 6th, 1967, what happened then? On January the 6th, 1967, Ghana in West Africa gained independence from British colonialism. Of course, neocolonialism kicked in after that. However, who stepped out of prison to be the first president of Ghana? And I mean literally stepped out of prison. None other than Kwame Nkrumah. Let us understand that all of our histories are intertwined. The struggle for and on behalf of political prisoners today is an ongoing struggle. No, my brothers and sisters, they did not begin yesterday or day before. It has been going on for decades. In fact, over decades. We must remember our political prisoners. We must respect all of them. And how do we show that respect? By getting them out. And I go back to what Brother Ralph Pointer has said many times, all right? The Puerto Ricans, viva Puerto Rico, by the way, viva Puerto Rico. But the Puerto Ricans have shown prisoners. Can we do any less? They have fought for their political prisoners in the U.S. We can do no less. And this drone man murdering so-called president of the United States of America, none other than drone man Barack Obama, who has killed thousands, and I mean tens of thousands of people around the world, including in North Africa, East Africa, and the so-called Middle East. We have to understand what we're dealing with. An insidious, hypocritical system. We have to divorce ourselves from this system, free our political prisoners, because in so doing, we free ourselves and the struggle continues. So I'm going to stop right there. As you can probably tell, I'm very passionate about what we must deal with. I've been in the struggle for over 47 years, and the struggle continues. A luta continua. The struggle continues. All power to the people. Thank you so much, Sister Betty Davis. Thank you, Brother Ralph. Love you, Sister Lynn Stewart.
Thank you so much, Larry Pinckney. I've been told here that I talk too much, and I'm going to keep it brief, but we are still in a period of sleep induced by our history and presently in the face of Barack Obama. We are still asleep. We don't know to make a demand that we had learned about by so many others, starting with the period of freedom. And Frederick Douglass says, nothing concedes. You know, the government can only talk to us if we make a demand. and we refuse to make a demand. And when I say our history, we have been taught in our history as black people, as oppressed people, that we too can join this imperialist government. Now, the induction is based on our not understanding that this is an empire. It is an imperial empire that steals the resources from around the world as well as at home, stealing from the workers at home. It's the same thievery imposed on different people. And until we understand that, that becomes a part of our history of misunderstanding. And then they put Mr. and I'm going to fast forward again to Mr. Obama today. He's not the whole story. He's just a part of the story. They tell us and they told us if we elect Mr. Obama, then racism is put behind us. Now, many of us who knew better than that spoke out against that, as you have done, Brother Larry, as everybody on this program has done. This is not the answer, but we have been induced into this sleep, and we're still asleep, and Mr. Obama continues with his with the agenda, the black face on the white of a white imperialist nation. And many of us are still put asleep by that. And as those who are suffering the most, I say those who are suffering the most, are our political prisoners who are in jail. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our next, our next speaker. Ready?
Okay, we want to have Sister Lynn come on, and we cannot neglect Brother Tom Syracuse. He has been putting out some incredible information. Joel Myers has also, and we want to get a report from Richie. But if you don't mind, brothers in the revolution, after Sister Lynn, we need to hear from Brother Reverend Harris in terms of the events that have been taking place around his Black Lives Matter march. Sister Lynn, are you in the house?
I am in the house, but not at the peak of my game. I had a procedure today, and I'm kind of a little under the weather. But here I am, and I did want to say I thought maybe that Ann Lamb needed to go early, and I'd be happy to cede my time to her at this point and come back later. Is that right,
Mr. Lynn,
Ralph?
She wasn't able to make it. She has a conference call. I misunderstood one of the numbers that's on the screen, so please forgive me. That was an error on my part. Sister Ann Lamb is on a conference call as we speak regarding Seth Hayes. So
Alrighty.
We understand what your agenda is, and whatever you give us is pearls of wisdom that we are willing to receive.
All right, great. I wanted to make a first report that, of course, my prison daughter, Pat Clark, that I spoke about a few weeks ago, a woman I was in prison with, who is so deserving of a compassionate, or a, I should say, being given a presidential pardon, or at least her sentence being commuted, of course, was not among the 95 that was given by this very, very hypocritical Obama. And I say that to you with full understanding, as today he shed crocodile tears, children in Sandy Hook, not a tear shed for those killed with legal guns in Chicago. Under his tutelage, his guy, Rahm Emanuel, who has allowed Chicago, which was always a killing field, to become even more of a killing field, as you watched and saw a 16-year-old skipping down the street, suddenly hit by a hail of bullets, his bodily fluids shooting into the air. Rahm Emanuel, the crocodile tears president, who cries for dead white children, but not for the dead black children. And, of course, this is also the week when the 12-year-old in Cleveland, there will be no punishment for those legal guns that killed him. No, that is up to us. And I say, and I quote, I'm going to expand on what Ralph said earlier about people being asleep. Mumia had a great quote. That's Mumia Abu-Jamal, the political prisoner that we all count as one of our number one goals. And he said, when people hear of injustice and do nothing, they are dead. And there are a lot of corpses walking around. And that is true. I want to say that at this time of the year, I also think of myself. I wasn't supposed to get out to 2018. Here it is, January 5th, 2016, and I am home. And I am home because my Joshua, my Ralph Pointer, raised the hue and cry and organized people to shout those walls down. And they did indeed. And I came home 2 years ago. And compassionate release was what they called it, but it was really a people's organizing, and we must continue that. There was an op-ed piece in the New York Times entitled Dying Alone in Prison, and that is what I was thinking would happen to me, dead on a stranger's floor. And I thought when they kept turning us down and turning us back, and when it was finally, as all compassionate releases, in the hands of the very people who had prosecuted me, the U.S. attorneys for the Southern District, I thought we had no hope whatsoever. Prevailed. We prevailed because we organized and we shouted those walls down. And I want you to know that in this article in the New York Times, they indicated that in that year, there were only 101 federal prisoners who were approved for compassionate release, 101 out of almost a million prisoners. I do want to say we must work harder, and we must take to heart the words that Ralph says in his credo about the way this has to happen. It's not just shouting the walls down. It's not the ease of signing a petition online. It's about getting out there, and it's about perhaps organizing in a different way. And I want to read a poem that has been my byline, my credo, perhaps. I actually read it to the jury in Larry Davis, and of course they came back and acquitted. So I'm going to read it to everyone now. It's by Bertolt Brecht. It was originally written in German. I am reading a translation, Larry, and that translation is, "And I always thought." And I always thought the very simplest words must be enough. When I say what things are like, everyone's heart must be torn to shreds, that you'll go down if you don't stand up for yourself. Surely you see that. Surely, let us all see that in 2016. Let us open our eyes. Let us infuse our lives so that we can save the lives of the next generation and that generation which is still dying in prison. Thank you, Ralph.
Well, thank you so much, Lynn. And you raise the hairs on my arm when you speak. And I say this not with tongue in cheek, but I now understand more why they put you in jail. It had nothing to do, yes, it had something to do with terror. It had to do with freeing all of us from terror with your voice that so many can hear. Thank you for that, Lynn. And we must continue. And this program is dedicated to bringing our political prisoners home, the best of us, that they put in jail because they didn't want them among us. If they couldn't kill them like they did Fred Hampton and many, many others who fought for freedom in our Latino community, I'm not sure I'm correct when I say that, but so many union organizers were killed in the Americas for attempting to organize and free us from the terror of this capitalist imperialist system. I'm going to wrap it up. I've been told to wrap it up and go to our next speaker, who is Reverend Harris. Reverend Harris, are you there?
Yes, my brother. How are you?
Well, we're hanging in there, and we'd like to hear about your struggle.
Yes, sir. Last time we met, we were marching with Reverend Pinckney in Benton Harbor, Michigan. So it's an honor to hear your voice again. Yes, sir.
You remember.
My name is My name is Reverend Harris. I'm from the West Coast, Fresno, California, which I renamed my city to Mississippi Fresno. We are very under siege here with the local government, police department. We've had folks here that's been shot unjustly. First is holding a water hose, mistaken for a gun. I've been in the trenches here for over 25 years, had the honor to meet Reverend Pinckney, Brother Ralph, and many others when we went to Benton Harbor. When Michael Brown was assassinated in Ferguson, I took the streets here in Fresno to wake people up. And I heard someone say tonight that folk are asleep. They are asleep. But we have to wake them up. We have to get them up. Because if not, we're all going to be assassinated. And so we are going from neighborhood to neighborhood, hitting America in their pocketbook. We went up north where the rich folks live. A lot of development, a lot of brand new stores. And I was sending a message out to that side of the community, which is very upper class, that you have to feel our pain. You have to understand that we're humans too. We're not animals. Even though we were labeled as 3/5 of a human at one time, we're still human beings here in America. And because of my activity in organizing people from across California coming into Fresno, our local government, our chief of police, Jerry Dyer, put a warrant out for my arrest to silence me, to stop me from marching in the streets, shutting down businesses, stopping the economic machine that's keeping our people oppressed. And so tomorrow at 8 o'clock, I was arrested. A warrant was put out for my arrest. They did arrest me with a bunch of undercovers. And so tomorrow, it's a showdown at the courthouse to see just what they want to do. We waste tax dollars like this prosecuting folks like myself that standing up for justice, equality, and freedom for people. I stand up for the voiceless. I stand up for those who don't have hope. And as a Christian minister, I believe that it's my job and my duty to stand up and speak truth to power. And so there's no fear of me going into court tomorrow. My ancestors that came before me, much has been done worse to them than to me. And so I have to read and understand that what's going on has already happened before. And so the community is going to show up tomorrow in support of me. I'm looking at a year in jail. I'm looking to be fined thousands of dollars for, as the arresting officer said to me, that I, because of my marching, shutting down streets, because of Black Lives Matter, that I was costing the city too much money. And I thought that was a very interesting statement that he would tell me that I cost this city money when we have so many settlements and lawsuits, unjust civil rights lawsuits and settlements that's been paid out to families. And so this is what we're dealing with across the country. And so, as we said, we have to stand bold. We have to stand firm. We have to understand that freedom comes with a cost. And And tomorrow we're going to see what the cost is going to be. So thank you for giving me that time. You can go to my Facebook, Floyd Harris Jr. I am the founder of National Network in Action. Sister Mary Neal has done a wonderful job in putting out information in regards to tomorrow's court hearing. This case has gotten national attention across the country. And so I'll go ahead and yield my time to you all. And just thank you. Keep praying for me as I pray for you, that we will wake our people up.
Well, thank you so much. And again, I can see why they have you, because I remember you out in Benton Harbor as a powerful person, powerful speaker, and, you know, like a, you could feel your presence in the crowd. And I just say what happened to Reverend Pinckney when he talked about recall petitions, a very important thing to do. The recall is dangerous to them, and you are dangerous to them when you start talking about costing city money. If we can have an organized costing the city money, they know they're in trouble. And so, Reverend Harris, I'm with you in spirit. I can't come to California, but I will be with you from now until we have three. I'm going to stick over to
all right. I think Brother Tom is in the house. And after Brother Tom, we're going to let Brother Richie give us whatever announcements he has, because we recognize that he is an anarchist that takes his role of anarchy seriously. And he will have announcements about what's going on and where we should be. So, Brother Tom, I thank you so much for the articles that you sent about the attack on the homeless and analysis of what's going on with ISIL. And after Brother Tom, Brother Richie, and after Brother Richie, Brother Joe, I must remember, guys, please restrict your time, because we've got a lot of guests. We've got at least two guest speakers that I don't recognize, and we would like to be able to call on them. Go ahead, Brother Tom.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to say a few words and to be inspired by your previous speakers, Brother Ralph, Sister Lynn, the brother from the Lakota Nation, and Brother Reverend Harris. All of you know what happened in history. And then that's the first step. If we do not know what happened in history, we cannot figure out what's happening today. And we certainly won't be able to figure out what to do about it tomorrow. Now, when I listen to all of you, it occurs to me that the rulers of this country know no limits when it comes to hypocrisy. Now just consider this. Sister Lynn was thrown into jail and was brutally treated and almost died because she felt that that everyone deserved a fair trial, and she wanted that to apply to this Muslim cleric. She was thrown into jail for doing that. And yet, we have a government which is closely allied to one of the most brutal governments in the world, this medieval clique of sheikhs that rule Arabia and the Gulf states, the government of Saudi Arabia just executed how many people? 47 people, including a renowned Muslim cleric, for criticizing that government. And what was the hypocrite Obama's statement? That he was concerned. He used the word concerned. That was it. Hypocrisy of hypocrisies. It never ends. I'd like to also talk a little bit about ISIS. Another hypocrisy. Here our government appropriated the biggest arms deal with two countries, namely Saudi Arabia and Turkey, to arm them to the teeth. And these countries, and this is known by our government, is supplying these American arms to ISIS. And yet, our hypocritical president claims that he wants to destroy ISIS, that ISIS is a threat to the entire world. And yet, he is supplying American arms to two countries, which in turn are selling those arms to ISIS, who in turn are going to use these to kill any American soldiers that we send over there, never mind the people in that area. How hypocritical can you get? And all of this has caused such death and destruction in these countries, in Syria, and Lebanon, and Iraq, and Afghanistan, and Libya, and Yemen, and Somalia, that over 1 million people in desperation are forced to risk their lives to go into Europe, which has been cooperating with the empire of empires, the United States, in causing all of this havoc, to go there just to get some safety. And when they get there, they find that they are despised and put into camps, and one nation after another, including nations that have called themselves very progressive, like the Scandinavian countries, in the last few days, both Denmark and Sweden now are closing their borders. Yes, they've taken thousands of refugees in, but now they don't want to take any more. Why? Because they can't use these refugees to exploit their labor. Their economies are slowing down, so they can't use them. And by the way, this migration from the Middle East into Europe is nothing new. This started right after World War II, as Europe was beginning to recover, and there was a demand for labor, for cheap labor. And so that was met by allowing or promoting cheap labor to migrate from the Middle East into Europe. There are people that have been living in France and England and Scandinavia and Germany for generations that came to those countries right after World War II. And why did they go to Europe in the first place? Because after World War I, with the fall of the Ottoman Empire, the British and French and later the Americans went into the Middle East and overthrew any secular, progressive, nationalistic government, like Mossadegh, for example, in Iran and installed these brutal military or theocratic dictatorships. So anyway, this is just a brief overview of what why we have to know this history. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. It is always great to hear from you. And we have Richie, who's going to give us information on what's happening, an anarchist who is in the street and who understands anarchy and would like to explain it. And one day we're going to give him an opportunity to speak on what a real anarchist is. And we have to be quick because we have Joel, who's waiting in the wings, and to give us more information on history and the present. Are you there, Richie?
Yes, Ralph. How are you? And it was nice to see you in the courtroom, making sure that Mamiya was going to get a hearing and making sure no shenanigans are going to be held in that courtroom. And I'd like to say that we are trying to organize. I'm working with the shutdown people that organized a 3-day shutdown of New York City. We brought political prisoner families and families from around the country who have been killed by the police. And we like and invite you, and if Lynn can make it, I know that depends on her health, but if she can, we'd like to invite you to an organizing meeting, everybody listening to this radio show, lives in the New York City area, to we're trying to get all these other groups that never worked together to work together this year. Everybody has a single agenda. We're not going to make it that way.
That's a great
suggestion.
And
the meeting, for anybody, I'd love you to talk, if you can call me during the week before Thursday, if I had to help organize it and get it out there more than I can. It's going to be at 66 Broadway in Manhattan on the fifth floor at 6:30 this Thursday. And as you know, in my work, I work with political prisoners and the MOVE organization and with you and Lane for a long time. And we feel that we cannot continue in little separate groups anymore. And we need the housing people to care about political prisoner issue. We need the political prisoner issue to combine with the housing issue. So asking, no matter what group you're in, and we will talk about political prisoners at the meeting, I promise you, because I'll be there, and we'll talk about anarchism too. We're asking people to please come. What I like to do is organize a big event to say, no, we are not interested in the election. I'll leave you with one quote from, and just quote one thing from Alexander Berkman, and I'll go off so other people can talk. Emma Goldman said, if voting did anything, they'd make it illegal. And they still would make it illegal. And please, people who think Bernie Sanders is a socialist, since when do Zionists become socialists? He's getting millions of campaign dollars from the Zionist pro-war warmongers that eventually are also fluffies for Hillary Clinton. And the left needs to rebuke Bernie Sanders as a joke publicly. He is a clown. And I just want to leave you, I know I want to give other people time, one quote and one poem, and I'll leave you next week with another anarchist quote. But I thought I have a poem called The Chair from Amir Abu-Jamal, and I thought I'd read it quick and then let you respond to what I said, and hopefully you'll be able to make it for the meeting. This is called The Chair by Amir Abu-Jamal. This is his newest poem from 2015, only a month old, I think. To the young, the life of the elderly is as distant as another country. To the healthy, illness happens to other people. It takes time and change to teach us that all of us are united on the wheel of life, and that if we live long enough, we will all enter the house of the elderly. When I recently became ill, it was more a shock than even the symptoms themselves. For after almost 30 years on death row, sickness only touched me briefly, able to be counted on one hand with several fingers remaining. In fact, it rarely lasts longer than a day. Then it struck like thunder, helped along by improper drugs administered by prison doctors. The results, effects, the systematic weakness left me nodding in a wheelchair, for I was simply unable to ambulate. Even though I'm no longer in that chair, the experience taught me more than I ever wanted to know. I cannot pass someone in a wheelchair without at least nodding to them, for they are me. I know from bitter experience that such chairs can be painful at the hours of sitting. Who knew? Question mark. Now I know. Illness, like aging, is part of the life cycle of the living. We are all on the wheel of time, waiting our turn to learn something anew. And I just want to leave. Everybody should know who Major Tillman is, because he's the one who saved Mamiya's life. He saw Mamiya on the floor in the prison, and he confronted the warden, and the warden said to him, Mamiya is none of your business. This man saved Mamiya's life. And for saving Mamiya's life, they transferred him to a different prison. But he's also a lawyer, jailhouse lawyer, and a healer. He healed Mamiya's when they were trying to kill him. And he said that the prison warden demanded that Mamiya can, he demanded to the warden that Mamiya get medical attention when he was very sick and still in general population, for which Tilly paid a high price, thrown into isolation and transferred to another prison. Others have shown care and love for Mamiya throughout his sickness. So everybody should find out who, where Major Tillman is. It's he's the one who got in the warden's face and said, Mamiya is my business. So that shows the work we are doing on the outside is getting into the inside. And that we need to continue that work. And I hope you can come, Ralph, or I hope you be in the area, so you can get these other groups to come to this meeting Thursday at 6:30. It's the Mass Incarceration Network, but you don't have to be part of Mass Incarceration. And we are going to unite with the political prison movement to get every political prisoner out. And there's a lot of prisoners up for parole this year, and we need to not let them in there anymore. And we need to have a general strike. And we have to confront these useless unions.
Thanks for that. And thanks for that information. We're running out of time, and I wanted to have more time for Joe Meyer, who will be at the meeting, I'm sure, to give us an analysis as to what he has seen over the week.
Hello, but first we want to acknowledge 5405. If you could give us just a quick shout-out. Hello, 5405.
Hey, Mary, it's me, Anna, from New York. How are you doing today, sir, Mary?
Okay, it's very good to have you there.
Could
you please come back next week? We'll put you on first, all right?
I will.
Because we're running out of time.
I'm just listening
in.
Thank
you so much.
I love you, Mary. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 7366, we want to give you a shout-out.
Yes, I am Jennifer Cobb, and I'm the founder, president, CEO of And Justice for All, and I am immensely enjoying this program.
Okay, we hope you will come back next week. If you want to give us an announcement, it's very important that people understand that all over the country. Okay, Joel, you're in the house. Go, Joel, and we'll close out with Joel Myers.
Joel? Joel, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead, Joel.
Hello?
We're going to go over a little bit. We want your thoughts. Very important.
Oh, yes. Hello. How much time do I have? Let's see. It's getting near the...
We're going to give you time. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, I was really immensely enjoying the show. And not really, a lot of it is just... hard to take, you know, because we, on the outside, on the street, you know, we walk around, we have our little problems and so on, but we're at least in my own case, it's not like the same kind of awareness that we have of the people who are suffering behind bars, who are suffering under the jails, under the prisons. And sometimes we like to say that we're out here in minimum security, meaning that this whole system is like one big prison. But those gradations and stratifications are important, and we have to keep remembering that in order to remain dedicated and not to get complacent or bought off because our own lives are not as intensely oppressed as those who have really been singled out for punishment because they have stood up to the rights of the people, very often at the sacrifice of their own well-being and so on, that and this is really what this system is all about. It's punishing people, making examples to frighten everybody else, to back everybody else off, and we can't let them do that to us. Now, I was listening today to Obama. He was on TV. He's talking about how we need more gun control to stop all of these gun violence from taking place. When most of the gun violence today, or at least a lot of it, is directly or indirectly a consequence of the system itself. It creates a problem where people are pitted against each other, where people are desperate, people are also directly murdered or imprisoned. You can look at imprisonment as a partial murder because when somebody's in prison, it means that a lot of their life is in suspended animation. They take your life out of the middle rather than chop it off the end. So, but anyway, he was talking about, if you listen to what he said, it wasn't even about guns. It was more about surveillance, about how people shouldn't be allowed to get guns if they don't pass certain background checks, which are going to be very intrusive. And then he began to explain how the background checks, it could apply to everybody, not just somebody who's buying guns, but we need like more scrutiny into people's mental health, a bigger mental health system, which is another, in many cases, just another form of incarceration with less due process and under very often even worse conditions, as has been brought out on this in the discussions of this show. So what they're talking about is disarming the population and empowering the government to conduct even more surveillance and spying on everybody so that in order to not only react to the violence that the system generates, but in the name of preventing violence to colonize our very minds. And it was a very scary performance. And again, I think it has to be put together with this demand for more and more spying and control on the part of the government over every factor of our lives, together with disarming the population, especially those whom the system considers dangerous, who might use those arms not in service to the murderous system, but in resistance, and also combine that with the fact that Obama has been given the power to merely point a finger at somebody, identify them as an enemy combatant, and they can be seized by the military, and I say disposed of by the military without any due process, without any publicity, without any notification of the public or even next of kin. So we're living increasingly under the kind of dictatorship that really growing more and more into a full-fledged Nazi-istic police state. And we have to be aware of what's being done in the name of whenever you hear them talking in the name of freedom and all of these nice ideas, you could be sure that it's just the opposite that's being sold and pitched. So anyone who had any illusions that Obama would ever amount to anything positive, this is time to really see how we've been had, and to make up for all the quiet period when many people that have seen so many things wanted to protest it. For some reason, they not wanted to jeopardize Obama or the Democrats have really deadened themselves to the very important principles. The amount of war against the entire world has gigantically escalated under Obama, and yet the anti-war movement has pretty much folded into almost nothing. It's from the time before Obama, when at least there were thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. So people have to, we've had a big rest, so we should have the energy to come bounding back, because there's a lot of reasons why resistance and fight back is needed and has to be mobilized. And I
thank
everyone,
Joel,
for the honor of speaking on this show. It's a very unique honor.
Well, thank you so much. As usual, your insights are such that I'm going to replace me with you next week. You're going to start off the program telling us what to do. Mary, thank you for bringing all the guests in, Reverend Harris, et cetera. We have so many people out there listening. And as Mary Neal said, I love listening to the program because I learn so much. This is an educational program. We are all being educated. I'm going to turn it over to Betty.
I want to say a shout-out to Sister Mary Neal because she alerted us about Reverend Harris, and we're going to have to give her time to participate in our discussion next week. I like what she said to me earlier. She said, I am a political prisoner. We are political prisoners in our homes. The government has us as prisoners no matter where we are. And with that, we're going to say goodnight to everybody who contributed, to our two special guests, 7366 and 5405. Please hang in there with us. We want to hear your thoughts, and we'll hope you'll bring more. Say goodnight to all our warriors.
I wish I could share all the love.